Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Wild Hour. The Wild Hour is sponsored by the Wharton Law School of Visibility Design. The Wild Hour is an educational service to public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Wharton. The Wild Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the internet. For more information about the Wild Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the October Money Changer when we come back. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. Everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you in your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. Information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how this information is gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour program. It's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational, and best of all, it's free of charge. Why don't you just call the school at area code 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967 and order your free general law CD package. If you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org. Well, I got the October 2005 Money Changer. I thought I would review it. He's got three or four articles in here that I think that are of very vital current interest or current events interest. Money Changer, remember, is put out by Franklin Sanders. This is the October 2005 issue. You can subscribe to the Money Changer at Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee. That's P.O. Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, 38486. Or you can call and place an order at 888-218-9226. Again, that's area code 888-218-9226. And I always recommend to my students that they subscribe to one, two, or three of these underground papers. I call them underground. They're the counterbalance to the mainstream media. Mainstream media promotes and advertises the government program. The underground, or the counterbalance news media, tells you here's what's wrong with the government's program, and here's why you ought not to buy it. Now, the first article I want to cover here is called The Tagging Terrorist Chicken Story. It's called The Latest Tyranny, Tagging Terrorist Chickens. Have you heard about the National Animal Identification System, NAIS, National Animal Identification System? The radio ads feature a farmer telling us how hard it is to make a living farming today, harder than it was in Mom and Daddy's day. Worse yet, now we've got the risks of all these new diseases. But golly gee, the government is going to help. The government agent is here to help us. They've come up with a voluntary program to register our farms and animals to protect us and our animals from diseases. And all good Americans will sign up. Characteristically, the radio propaganda speak beareth no likeness to the truth. To prove that for yourself, first visit www.usda.gov, NAIS, and then click on the draft strategic plan on the upper right-hand side. I'm going to pause right there and make an observation. I got a copy of that plan the other day. I've got a couple of head of livestock here, and I suppose they send these out to all of us that have livestock, and they would like to have George Gordon, I'm sure, sign up with the USDA program. I'm not going to sign up, and I'm one of those bad Americans. Let me show you this. It says here, the government is going to help. They've come up with a voluntary program to register our farms and animals to protect us and our animals from diseases, and all good Americans will sign up. Well, if I don't sign up, then obviously I must be a bad American, because all good Americans are going to sign up. So if you're an American and you don't sign up, then you have to be a bad American. So that's the side of the ledger column you're going to find me on. Now, this is a voluntary program. It's voluntary today, but it becomes mandatory as they get more and more people to volunteer. See, and you start off, and if you say, well, this is a mandatory program, you get everybody's dander up. But if you say this is a voluntary program, then a certain number of people are going to volunteer. Then they come along and they say, well, no, so many people have volunteered because it's such a good program. And then they're going to bait us in with some tax money. They'll tax you and then give it to me, or at least offer it to me. And that always makes people feel real good.
And then when they get more than half the farmers signed up for it, they'll say, well, now we need to make it mandatory so that we can make it work. Well, why won't it work if it's voluntary? Well, because not everybody will sign up for the program. Well, if everybody doesn't sign up for the program when it's voluntary, then it must not be a very good program, or those people that didn't sign up would have signed up, wouldn't they? Well, going on, it says, we all know that there is no pandemic or epidemic now sweeping through the livestock population, at least not anything that would demand such drastic measures. If so, the government's first act wouldn't be punching an ear tag into every chicken that they could catch. Any 18-year-old mother who knows how to hand test a forehead or fever can tell you that tagging ears to fight disease is ridiculous. No, during epidemics, government agents kill the infected animals and all animals in the herd. Then they spread out and test the neighboring herds and destroy those that test positive. And is they're not fighting disease, then why NAIS? Now, if they're not fighting disease, then why should we register our cattle? Why should we register our animals? Does anybody ever wonder about that? Why do we have automobile registration, gun registration? Why does government want us to register with them our property? Is there something that happens? Is there some legal connection with the registration of your property with the government that changes the ownership of the property? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. When you register your car with the government, you give your car to the government, and that's why you carry a license plate on the front and back of it to identify the state of Tennessee or the state of California's property. You still maintain an interest in the property. You have a right of possession. You have certain property rights in the vehicle, but the vehicle itself belongs to the state. And the same thing happens when you get a birth certificate for a child. You pass your seed through the fire to Moloch and give your child to the state. The state now owns the child. You still have an interest in the child. You can put braces on his teeth. You can raise him. You can educate him in the government school. You can play baseball with him. But you can't own him. Now, this is a program that's set up by the USDA to protect the national agribusiness multinational corporations. Listen to the rest of the story. Just follow the money. Who benefits? Well, agribusiness has lobbied the U.S. Department of Agriculture to create a system to protect the agribusiness corporations from legal liability if an epidemic does break out. More of the NAIS would protect agribusiness market share, forestalling a public revulsion against their product by confirming that only a few animals are sick, rather than thousands of animals are sick. NAIS enables huge agribusiness conglomerates that concentrate thousands of animals and so concentrate the chance for spreading disease in those overpopulated animal pens to the point that they can then point their finger at someone else. Here's the scenario. Let's suppose somebody in Sheboygan gets sick from eating something that they ate. Later, health officials determine that what they ate came from a local fast food joint. Now, that fast food joint gets its meat from the ABC cow factory. The ABC cow factory buys cows from the XYZ feedlot. These feedlots had cows numbered 1Q10 through 1Q500 in their possession, and those cows came from 15 small farms in suburban Tempe, Arizona. Goodbye, 15 small farms in suburban Tempe. Hello, scapegoat for the fast food joint, the slaughterhouse, and the feedlots. To protect themselves, these large corporations will effectively put small farmers out of business. Not only the program costs, which fall on the farmer, but also the threat of fines and jail for not complying, which will drive small farmers off the land. And at the same time, the NAIS, remember that's the National Animal Identification System, sets up the same corporations as the only entities granted the privilege to raise animals, since they, of course, are the only ones who can be trusted to follow such a plan to protect the national herd. I want to underline this word, national herd. Are there any exemptions? But I've just got a few chickens and a horse. Not me, right? Wrong. The NAIS plans provide no exemptions whatever. Whether you have one chicken, one horse, one cow, one sheep, one goat, one bison, one llama, one alpaca, one turkey, one duck, everyone must register both the premises and the animals. And goodbye, property rights. Now I'm going to put a bracket around exemptions because I'm going to come back here and we'll take a legal liability analysis here on exemptions. And then we'll take a look at goodbye, property rights. I don't think I'm going to give up my property rights. I don't know about you, but I think we'll figure out a way to get around this. Now, mandatory means mandatory. Now, I'm going to underline mandatory means mandatory because that's not true. Mandatory means voluntary, but the author of this article over here, I'm sure he means well, but we'll take a legal look at this, do a legal analysis on mandatory, and I'll show you how that works. The NAIS schedule fixes January of 2008 for mandatory enforcement. Now, mandatory means forced, and enforcement means putting into force, not of your own free will. The government will fine you, put you in jail, or seize your animals for raising animals without registering them with the government. Raising animals without a license. So I reckon that's the way they'll call it. That's right. 6,500 years of historical rights will be abolished. And from now on, you'll be breaking the law for being a farmer without government permission. And what's more, the department does not plan to issue alerts to inform livestock owners of the requirements until April of 2007, only 8 months prior to the date when it will be mandatory to submit the GPS coordinates of one's home and the RFID of one's animals to the U.S. Department of Agriculture database. More good news. Who's going to pay for this NAIS? The answer is you will. It does not favor the small farmer, but corporations with huge budgets. These conglomerates get to write off government registration fees, but the write-off means almost nothing to small farmers who must first come up with the money to comply. The NAIS is free now, but will not be in the future. Now, on their website, the National Animal Identification System states that even with public funding, there will be costs to producers, and there's a time tax, too. States, tribes, producers, managers of livestock, livestock shows and events, market operators, processing plants, service providers, and third parties will all have to provide labor for this system. And what about taxes? By registering with the NAIS, you open yourself for future taxes. By registering your car, you pay taxes. By registering yourself as the owner of your home, you pay taxes. By registering yourself with a social security number, you pay taxes. Taxes for being a farmer and taxes on your animals will come too. I'm gonna put a bracket around these taxes here, because I think that there's a solution to that problem also. Now, those that are for and those that are against. Tennessee, and probably your state too, is now implementing the voluntary premises identification section of this plan. In your state, you will see the Farm Bureau, the Cattlemen's Association, and the Extension agents lining up. They're lining up with new government programs, which comes from new government money. And they'll push the NAIS compliance by holding out carrots of new money available only to those who register. Now, can we defeat this NAIS? You bet. There's still hope that we can defeat this National Animal Identification System. Dr. Mary Zanoni is a lawyer from New York, and she has filed official comments with the USDA Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, it's called APHIS, A-P-H-I-S, the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, decrying this National Animal Identification System. She has also founded an organization, Farm for Life, and in her brilliantly argued statement filed in June of 2005, she put this whole scheme in perspective. She said, quote, "The security of America's food supply and the resilience of livestock in the face of diseases are best served by decentralizing and dispersing food production and processing and breeding and maintaining livestock. If more citizens could depend on food raised and processed within, let's say, 100 miles of their homes, the danger of large-scale disruptions would be diminished. They would be minimized. And the cost of transport would be less, and it would affect a whole lot less any of the volatile fuel prices and any foodborne diseases. And it would be contained by the system's natural geographic limits. Similarly, if animals such as cattle, for example, are kept in small herds of, say, 10 to 100 animals, infectious diseases will have much more difficulty in spreading beyond a discrete geographical area." So what to do? Well, the state cattlemen's associations may be backing this idea, but chances are their members will not. Chances are the members have no idea what's going on. How many farmers, not agribusinessmen now, but how many farmers have you ever met that would think registering a chicken with the government is a good idea? Just talk to them. Encourage them. Tell them not to sign up their premises. The USDA is using farmers' supposed willingness to enter a voluntary program as a justification for making the program mandatory. This is the old government game where a pitiful, haggard, selfless government employee pleads to the camera. Look, all of these farmers have signed up on their own because they're good Americans, and it's just a few renegades that are holding out. Now, if we're going to be safe, we've got to make this mandatory, because we just can't talk sense to these people who, after all, we're only trying to protect. It's for their own good. And then, if you'd like to attack this politically, you can write to Dr. Mary Zanoni at mlz@slic.com and support her efforts by signing up for her $25 a year newsletter to keep you informed about this program and those that are fighting it. And then contact your state veterinary office and complain. Then call your state senators and representatives and tell them that you oppose NAIS. Then write a letter to the editor of your local newspaper and then organize a public meeting. Now, this is called a political solution. I think that, as far as George Gordon's concerned, I think I'll just go with a judicial solution based upon property. But there's a little bit more here on page 12. Get in touch with your food supply now, but first educate yourself and go to www.usda.gov, NAIS, National Animal Identification System. Then click on Draft Strategic Plan on the right side of the page under the What's New heading and read the 24-page implementation plan for yourself. This article is written by Justin Sanders. I think that's Franklin Sanders' son. Did a good job here of writing. I enjoyed the article, and there's a little bit more to it. But I'm going to go through and I'm going to analyze this article, and I don't want you to take it as being criticism. But there's another methodology for dealing with government. One is political. We all go to public school, and we all learn politics. And we're all taught and trained that whenever there's a problem, we need a political solution. The second methodology is a judicial solution, which is based upon rights, based upon property. I prefer the second solution, although it doesn't eliminate the problem. It solves the problem for George Gordon. So let me tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not going to sign up with the USDA, and I'm not going to register any of my animals. Now, most people would say, well, gee, you'll be in violation of the law if you do that. The law is mandatory. It says you have to sign up. You have to sign up your farm, register your farm, and then you have to identify your animals and send that animal identification to the government. That's true. But only if you're engaged in trade, commerce, business, or industry that affects a public interest, and I'm not one of those. Let me repeat that. You only have to sign up if you're engaged in trade, commerce, business, or industry affecting a public interest, and I'm not affecting any public interest with my livestock. They're all private. Now, the way you affect a public interest is to sell a cow in commerce. The normal methodology, you have some cattle, and you want to sell some cattle. So you called your local trucker, and you have him come to your farm and pick up, well, let's say, two steers and haul them over to the sale barn. They are now entering commerce. They're not in commerce yet, but they're entering commerce. They're out on the highway, and they go down the highway to the sale barn. Now, the sale barn is a corporation, and it's registered with the state. And the state requires that if you've got animals that are entering commerce, they have to have brucellosis vaccinations. My cows don't have any brucellosis vaccinations because they were born on my premises, and I don't vaccinate. And that's because I'm organic, and that's because I don't want any snake venom or monkey pus coursing through the veins of my livestock. I don't want to eat that. I'm not opposed to other people who want to eat that, but I don't want to eat it. That's why I raise my own animals. Because whoever buys those two steers at the sale barn, it doesn't make any difference if you buy them and you're just a private Joe Sixpack, or a slaughterhouse buys them, or another farmer buys them. They have to be vaccinated before they leave the sale barn because they are in commerce. They affect trade. They affect commerce. They affect business. They affect a public interest. Now let's go back to square one. Let's suppose you come over to my farm and you say to me, well, Mr. Gordon, I would like to buy one of your steers. And I say to you, terrific. I want 4 ounces of gold, $200 for that steer. And you say, okay, I will give you $200, 4 ounces of gold. That gold is private property. Federal Reserve notes are commercial property. That's why in 1933, our government took our gold away from us so that they could put all business transactions into commerce under Article 1, Section 8 of the Commerce Clause and eliminate private property and implement the first plank to the Communist Manifesto. And Americans bought into the program. So they all took their gold in and gave it to the Bank of America, who turned it over to the Federal Reserve and took Federal Reserve notes in place of their gold. They now divorced themselves from property and put themselves in commerce. Now, all transactions in America are done with Federal Reserve note dollar trade units. There are a few of us, not very many, but there are a few of us that still follow the old biblical principles of you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, and we deal in property, we deal in gold and silver coin. We do not deal in commerce, we deal in property. Right, now let me take you through these four or five paragraphs and let me show you here what we're talking about exemptions. Notice here he's talking about the national herd. Now, from each according to his ability and to each according to his need is the political expedient that is in force and effect in America today and has been since the 1930s. It's the basis of communism. It's shared ownership. It's ownership by committee rather than private property. Fortunately, the law that says thou shalt not steal is still in full force and effect, protected by the First Amendment to our federal constitution. We can still practice private property, but it takes a little work. It takes a little knowledge. And it's not nearly as convenient because most people today want convenience. And so they want credit cards and checks. And they want to be able to use Federal Reserve notes and stocks and bonds and negotiable instruments, which are all unjust weights and balances, all prohibited by the law of God. And everybody who participates in trade, commerce, business, and industry that affects the public interest, which all of these mediums of exchange do, then participate in the principle of law that says from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. And every farmer that registers his cattle Every farmer who registers his premise and every farmer who practices unjust weights and balances has his cattle in the national herd. George Gordon is going to keep his cattle out of commerce, out of trade, out of business, out of industry, and keep them as private property on my land, my cattle, and I'm not going to deal in unjust weights and balances. Now, are there any exemptions? Now he said, but I've just got a few chickens and a horse. Not me, right? Wrong. The NAIS plans provide no exemptions whatever. One chicken, one horse, one cow, one sheep, one goat, one bison, one llama, one alpaca, one turkey, one duck, all must register premises and animals. Well, that's not true. It's not true. It appears to be true, and that's what the law says. But when you really get down on the bottom line, that's not correct. Now, you just saw it happen in New Orleans. They had what they called a mandatory evacuation order, and the mayor issued it. And they said on the television, do you remember this? I said, well, everybody has to leave. And I heard one lady said, well, I left. I didn't want to leave, but I had to. It was mandatory. There was one guy that they had on there, and he was sitting on his front porch, and a couple of policemen came by in a boat, and they said, hey, you want to ride? And he said, no. He said, well, you know, you have to evacuate. And he said, well, I'm not going to unless you come in here and drag me out of here at gunpoint. And for a while, they were talking on the TV, well, if we have to, we'll come in at gunpoint and we will remove these people from New Orleans against their will. And that went on for a while, and it cunningly coerced a lot of people to leave. But in the final analysis, there were 6,000 people in New Orleans that never did leave their homes. Did you know that? 6,000. And the government backed off of that mandatory order crap because if you were to come to somebody's house, he's standing on his porch and says, I don't want to leave. I am not going to leave. And they came up on the porch, handcuffed him, and took him out of there. That's called a taking. It's a violation of the man's Fifth Amendment rights to property. It would be a taking of his property without compensation. Can't do that. And as a matter of fact, nobody did that. Now, if the policeman comes by and he says to the people, you have to leave, it's a mandatory evacuation. It's the law. And if you don't, we'll arrest you and take you to jail. Now, if you get in the boat, you have voluntarily left your property. Now, if your house burns down or somebody comes in and robs it, the government has not taken your property. You voluntarily left it. It's an admiralty action. When you're on a ship on the high seas, boys and girls, and you abandon the ship, anybody who finds it, anybody who comes into it, has the right to salvage it. Anybody who comes into New Orleans and takes the property out of those houses is taking salvage. The houses have been abandoned. And that's what your government's doing now. They're coming in there and taking it because all you people abandoned your property. I'm not abandoning my farm. I'm not abandoning my animals. And yes, government agents will come in and they will threaten me. They will say, did you register? No, sir. Well, it's the law. It's mandatory. And I'll say, yes, sir. Understand that. Well, if you, here, sign here. No, sir, I'm not going to sign there. If you don't sign this, we'll arrest you and take you to jail. Okay. But let me tell you that you're taking my property without just compensation. I don't want to sell you my farm. I don't want to sell you my cows. And I don't want you to take them by force and violence against my will or over my objection. And they won't. They won't. They will do everything they can to cunningly coerce me into waiving my rights due to my ignorance. And if I do, then I will have voluntarily abandoned my property. Every farmer who registers his premises, every farmer who registers his animals will be doing so voluntarily. Now, you may believe that you're being threatened, but you know, you have to be the belligerent claimant in person. If you're going to claim your rights, you've got to claim them. Remember, it's the government agent who is trying to get you to waive your rights. He's trying to get you to abandon your ship on the high seas so that he can take your property by adverse possession. It's called salvage. It's called bottomry in admiralty law. Hang on, I got to give you a reminder here. And we will be back with more on the subject of the National Animal Identification System. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on my website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law Hour offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Okay, tonight we're reviewing The Money Changer, published by Franklin Sanders, Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, the zip code 38486. That's 38486 is the zip code. That's P.O. Box 178, West Point, Tennessee. Publication's called The Money Changer. I recommend it very highly. Franklin Sanders is an economist, publishes a newsletter, typically a newsletter, an economics newsletter, covers monetary events. In fact, this one does. The lead article is Deflation or Inflation, the Question That Won't Die. Why Buy Silver? That's on the front page. And then as you progress through the newsletter, there's a section in here, The Fat Lady Sings, the Dow Jones Industrial Averages, Adjusted for Gold or Priced in Gold, Bullion Price Update, Stocks, Bonds, Gold, Silver, the Dow in Gold Dollars, and so on. But Franklin also typically every month will write an article or two. There's another one in here I'm going to share with you called Peak Oil. And this article here about the tagging of farm animals. And I just wanted to point out that that the article's good and all the information's good. It has the same information that I got the other day from the USDA or whoever it was that sent it to me. I don't know. Oftentimes get material here from the government, the USDA. I do the same thing. I've been here for 20 years. I do the same thing with all of the USDA material. I put it right here in my round file, right here. Sometimes it's important in the request. Mandatory answer, you know, they've got census information, all kinds of things that go in here. And if government can cunningly coerce you into waiving your rights, like they did with gold in 1933, they said it's the law, everybody's got to turn his gold in. That was not true. All of the corporations had to turn their gold in, but not individuals. But every individual saw himself as, well, if it's the law, I guess I got to do it. And people in America, I can't speak for everybody in the world, but here in America, most Americans are woefully ignorant of law. And yet the law is the single most important subject matter in life. It's more important than your health. And that's why in the Bible you find that law is the forefront. It is the number one subject matter of every book in the Bible. It's the law, without exception. And that's because the law governs everything you do. The law governs your health. You can't have good health without a good understanding of the law. There are 18 laws that govern your health. You can go out here and take all the vitamins in the world, and this is going to help your health if you don't understand the health laws that God gave us that regulate your health. Same thing is true with economics. You need to understand these economic laws. Same thing is true with freedom and rights. Your freedom and rights don't come from your constitution, and they don't come from your government. They come from your God, your creator, gave you these rights. Government is entrusted with the duty to protect those God-given rights. Now, our government has shifted over from the protector of your God-given rights to the possessor or the agency that is in the process of seizing, taking away from you, expropriating or appropriating your rights from you. Now, nobody can take your rights. You have to give them up. You must surrender your rights. Nobody can take them from you. God won't, and he's guaranteed your rights. So if anybody's going to take your rights, it's going to be with your consent. And that's what's going on here. So the government comes along and they pass a law and they say, well, you have to do this. Now, if you're using Federal Reserve note dollars, and if you're selling your cattle at the auction barn, then you need to register your farm and you need to participate in the animal identification system, which makes all the sense in the world. Now, here's the basis for the animal identification system. The way the livestock system in America works today is that you raise some cattle and you sell them at the auction barn. And somebody at the auction barn buys them and takes them over to Hutchinson, Kansas and puts them on a feedlot. They raise them up on a feedlot and somebody buys them off of the feedlot, and like as not, they could take them to a slaughterhouse and slaughter them. And what if at the slaughterhouse we found that this meat, this carcass here, has some disease like brucellosis, tuberculosis, mad cow disease, or something else? We now need to protect the public health, because that's what commerce is all about. Commerce is the government's institution to protect the people who participate in commerce. There's no law that requires you to participate in commerce any more than there's any law that requires you to participate in Social Security. Now, when we talk about things being voluntary and mandatory, and oftentimes we believe things are in fact mandatory when in fact they're not mandatory, they are voluntary. Now, when we talk about exemptions, the writer here says that there are no exemptions whatsoever. If you have one chicken, one horse, one cow, one sheep, one goat, one bison, all must register, and they must register their premises and the animals. The government would like everybody to do that. And everybody who's going to participate in commerce needs to do that, so we can keep track of any sick animals. But what if you're not going to enter commerce? Here's the way I do business. I have some cows here, and I drink the milk off of my cows, and I kill some cows, and I eat their meat. Once in a while, I have more cows than I can eat. So I go to somebody privately. I don't take them to the sale barn. I don't advertise them in the newspaper. I don't affect any trade, commerce, business, or industry. And I go over to Joe Finkelstein, and I say, Joe, I've got a cow over here. I need to kill her. You want some meat? If Joe says, yes, I'd like some meat, I say, Joe, I want 4 ounces of gold, $200 for the cow. Would you like me to kill the cow and butcher it for you? Like as not, Joe will say, well, yes, I would. And I tell him that's going to cost you one extra ounce of gold, $50, to have me kill the cow and cut it and wrap it for you. And he says, okay, well, I'll do that. So I get 5 ounces of gold. That's a private transaction. And that's precisely what this lady is suggesting, and that's exactly what I advocate. You see, when you buy cattle from Canada and then transport them from Alberta, Canada to Washington and milk those cows, it's interstate and it's international commerce. And under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8, Congress can regulate that kind of business. You see, you divorce yourself from property and property rights, and you voluntarily enter commerce. Now, the way the system used to work in this country, every farmer had some cattle. And they were all kept in a local area. You raised your cattle in the local area, and you sold them at the local sale barn, and they went to the local slaughterhouse, and the people in the local area ate those cows in the local area. They never affected commerce. They never crossed state lines. Today, it's a different story. I could go over to my sale barn over here in Forsyth, or in Springfield, or up in Ava, any of the sale barns, and I could buy a cow. That cow could have come from Fresno, California. That cow may have came from Alberta, Canada. That cow may have come from Texas, Florida, Louisiana. God only knows where that cow came from. And that's because cattle are engaged in interstate commerce. They're engaged in interstate commerce because of these huge multinational corporations like the Tyson Meatpacking Company or Armor Star or Swift Meatpacking. They send buyers out to these local sale barns, and they buy all the cattle and take them to Texas to feedlots to feed them out. Or they'll buy heifers. A guy came by the other day, and he wanted to buy some heifers. I wouldn't sell to him, because if I sold this guy heifers, he wants to write me a check. He doesn't know how to deal with gold. It's not hard. I can teach you how to do that. But I won't sell my cows for Federal Reserve notes. I won't take your check. And that's because I won't enter commerce. I deal in property, and I deal in property rights. Now, as long as we deal in property and property rights, we have rights under the Bill of Rights and under our Constitution. When we enter commerce, we enter privilege. It's a franchise. And this writer hit the nail right on the head. What is it that they're after? They're after protection, just like the pharmaceutical companies. Listen to this story again. I want to read it to you again. Agribusiness, the Tyson chicken interests, the cattle breeding associations, etc. These big agribusiness corporations lobbied the Department of Agriculture to create a system to protect them from legal liability if an epidemic does break out. See, my cows are all healthy. My cows don't have any disease. I've got a big farm and just a few animals. The animals don't get sick unless you put them in great overcrowded conditions where they have 10,000 sows raising pigs in these animal factories. So when I hear the animal rights advocates complaining about these animal factories, I agree with them. That's the wrong methodology. It's wrong not so much from the, well, gee, I feel real sorry for the animals. It's wrong because it's a pestilence, it's a plague, it's a disease waiting to happen. So this author says you should have 10 to 100 animals. That's right. We should have thousands of people who have 100 animals rather than to have 100 people who have thousands of animals. Now, I disagree with the conclusion here that this has a political solution. First of all, the people of America don't know what the problem is and couldn't care less. That's problem number one. Number two, the farmers of America don't know what the problem is and they couldn't care less. And none of these two groups of people want to obey God and keep His commandments. Nobody wants to practice land Sabbaths. Nobody wants to practice jubilees. Nobody wants to practice just weights and balances. Now, we do not want the government in here meddling with our private rights and private property, but we want to break the law. We want to break the law of God. We want to use Federal Reserve note, paper money, stocks and bonds, negotiable instruments in interstate commerce. We don't want to practice private property rights. We want to practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. We do not want the Bible, and we don't want the laws of God in our public schools, in our colleges, our institutions, or our governmental apparatus. But we do want all the benefits that come from thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill. We like the law that says thou shalt not commit adultery to protect people from banging our wives, but we don't want that law to interfere with us when we want to bang somebody else's wife. Talk about a nation of hypocrites. America and Americans, top of the list. Top of the list. Now, if you've got a cow or you've got a few animals over here, If you will remove yourself from commerce, you can raise those animals and you can sell those animals in the marketplace, the private marketplace. Stay out of the newspaper, stay out of the yellow pages, stop affecting trade, commerce, business, or industry, deal in gold and silver coin, or trade the cow for a horse, or trade the horse for a dog, or trade the dog for something else. Trading is property and property rights. Gold and silver are property and property rights. Federal Reserve notes, checks, credit cards, and negotiable instruments are commerce, and they're regulated and controlled. And if you test it, they'll arrest you, jail you, and prosecute you for violation. They'll say you didn't register your premises, and you didn't register your cows, and they'll have real teeth in the law, and they'll put you in prison. Then you'll say there's no justice in America, and there's no private property. Yes, there is private property, but there isn't private property under the Commerce Clause. Yes, there is private property, but it doesn't include banks and bank accounts and checks and credit cards and negotiable instruments. Yes, it does include gold and silver coin, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It includes property, but not commerce. Now, the average Joe Sixpack does not know how to stay out of commerce. Commerce is the only thing he knows. He does not know private business. He does not know how to deal in private business. For most of you listening to my voice right now, shut up, sit down, fold your hands, register your farm, and register your cows. Do what you're told. Now, for a few of you out there that want to practice private property, and you want to avoid practicing the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property, well, then listen up. He mentions taxes in here. By registering with the NAIS, you open yourself up for future taxes. That's true. You do. And by registering your car, you pay taxes. That's right. That's right. By registering yourself as the owner of your home, you pay taxes. And that's true. And by registering yourself with a social security number, you pay taxes. Absolutely correct. Don't deny that at all. Taxes for being a farmer and taxes on your animals will come also. Well, why don't you think about this? Instead of registering for Social Security, has it ever occurred to you that maybe you ought to rescind your Social Security number and stop participating in the Social Security benefit program and stop paying the Social Security tax? Now, that tax is 16%. And one day I woke up and I said, I don't want to pay that tax. So I rescinded my Social Security number. Now, do you know I cannot work for General Motors? I can't go out and get a job somewhere. I can't go out here and work in trade, commerce, business, and industry because I don't have my Social Security number. So I voluntarily waived the benefits that come from Social Security, and I don't pay the tax. Now, that's because when I work, I don't take commercial paper, because that's what the tax is predicated upon. You see, under Hale versus Henkel, we all have a right to work. If you take a look at labor and labor laws, we have a right to labor, and our labor is property. And property has never been assessed or taxed in the United States. Property is not taxed in this country. Never has been. What's being taxed is privilege, and it's a privilege to act in commerce. If you want to buy, sell, and trade cattle in interstate commerce so that your cattle can be transported from your home to California or Alberta, Canada, and to participate in the national government herd, that's a privilege for which you must pay your taxes. Now, if you don't want to participate in that communist program, then the alternative to that is private property and private rights, which are not taxed. Now, my choice is private property and private rights. I don't have the benefits. I don't have the convenience of the credit card. I don't have the convenience of being able to dispose of my cattle at the local sale barn. I've got to go out and sell my cattle to individuals. I got to go out and beat the bushes. I got to go out and go to work. But I just wanted to point out that our Constitution is still in full force and effect, still works like a shot. And you still have rights if you know how to use them. Now, the last paragraph here says, contact your state veterinary office, call your state senators, and so on. Boys and girls, let me tell you, it's your veterinarians that are your problem. It is your state senators, it is your federal senators, it is your representatives, it is the political establishment that is your problem. I find it hard to believe that I'm going to write a letter to my senator, Kit Bond, and say, gee, Mr. Bond, I'd like to practice private rights. I think my senator is a communist. He calls himself a Republican. But he practices the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and he advocates that as public policy in the United States. And as far as I can tell, so does President Bush, so does the Republican and Democratic parties. I can't see writing a letter to a communist and telling him that I want to practice free enterprise. Now, if you want to do that, get after it. But I don't think that it's going to gain you very much. Another item over here called Goodbye Property Rights. The NAIS abolishes private property rights in farms and in animals. That's true. I agree with this author. The NAIS, run by a branch of the USDA, considers your animals to be not yours, but part of the national herd. That's true. That's what they want you to do. They want you to join the national herd with Tyson Meatpacking. and with the National Cattlemen's Association. They want you to join up, whether you got one cow or 1,000 cows. They want everybody in the program. Plainly, they're right. If they can force you to register, force, underline the word force. They can't force you to register your farm or your animals. But if you volunteer to do that, you are going to give those cattle to the government, maintain or hold a right of interest in those cattle, so long as you act within the terms and conditions of the regulations that come out of the USDA. I don't want to be regulated by the USDA, so I'm going to forego my privileges. For many years, I have not been able to sell my cattle through the local sale barn. I mean, it's just the way life is. I don't have a social security number, so I can't go out and get a job like all you normal people do. So I don't have to pay the tax, but I don't get the benefits. Now, most Americans have been raised with all of these benefits all their lives, and they really want those benefits. You want the convenience that you get from using commercial paper, Federal Reserve notes, checking accounts, and credit cards, and being able to drive up and down the highways. I don't have a driver's license. You know, when I want to travel someplace, I have to have my chauffeur drive me. I have a driver who is registered with the government, and he accepts a privilege from the state. I'm a common law free man. I don't want those privileges from the state. I want to be the master. I don't want to be the servant. Now, that's a choice that you have to make. But let me recommend again to you, as we close here, The Money Changer. This is the 2005 October issue. I recommend that you subscribe to The Money Changer for more than one reason. But this article here, if you've got one cow, or if you've got 20 cows, or 15 sheep, or 37 chickens, is good reading. It's a must. You ought to take the time to inform yourself and then make a choice. You know, it's what life is all about. It's made up of choices. Do you want to choose to join this government program or not? And in the old days, we could take our cows to the sale barn, but it's coming to an end. We're not going to be able to do that anymore. All right, we're about out of time, so let me give you your final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals by prearrangement. Remember, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. It says our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. We've got going, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.